Welcome to Another News, I'm Jeff Brady. We connect back to the shows about unidentified flying objects, specifically in the state of New York. There's an interesting history of aerial phenomena in New York that was initially reported word of mouth. Well, UFO sightings are now, of course, somewhat easier to compile and sort through using database software. According to our guest, Cheryl Costa, New York State UFO sightings account for 4% of the world's sightings. We cross-check those databases with nuclear stations, ley lines, and many other variables. Cheryl is a journalist and playwright. She began her weekly column, New York Skies, in the newspaper Syracuse New Times in 2013 and has presented at annual UFO Congress conferences around the country. Cheryl, welcome to Another News.
It's great to be here.
You've been writing about UFO sightings for a couple of years, but you've also had a lifelong interest in the topic. Let's start with some of the early reports of UFOs in New York State. How far do they go back in history, and what are some of the most significant early sightings?
Well, probably the earliest one that I know of. Now, that doesn't mean that somebody else doesn't know something else, but right now, the one I know of happened in 1790 up in Schley County. What happened was there was a Dutch settler, colonist, and in his report that he gave to the county seat several years later, he said he was sitting on his porch playing his fiddle. And it was about twilight, and he heard this deafening roar coming from someplace. And he looked towards the northern sky, and there was this bright light sort of coming at him. And then this thing, bright thing, came down probably about 150, 200 yards from his cabin. And it hovered above the ground. He describes it as long, like a snake. He said perhaps it was 150, 200 feet long. It had what appeared to be its front end kind of looked like a tree uprooted. So I kind of describe it to people, kind of hold your arm out with your fingers like a claw, and you get kind of the idea of what he was seeing. Mm-hmm. And then he said the shape of it kind of tapered down. It was very hot. It had a sparking look like you'd see with metal that was like in a forge at a blacksmith shop kind of thing. It had that kind of a look. It hovered a few feet above the ground, and it began moving, quote, at the speed of a galloping horse. He said it was about as big around as a full-grown hog, or pig, and as it went across the field, it came up to a hill, and when it met the hill, it just rose to meet the hill and still hovered at about the same distance from the ground, went up over the hill, and that was the last he saw of it. He said for almost a week afterwards, the area had a heavy smell like tar and sulfur.
That's 1790, and it's interesting, the sound that went along with it. Is that very common?
Not to my knowledge, no. Most people say these things are quiet, but then again, it was almost 300 years ago, so.
That's a good one. Does any other stand out to you, you know, within that time frame in history?
Not exactly that time frame. The next good one I can talk about is that there was about 1860. It was first noticed up around Albany, and I called the article the Chariots of Fire because two bright orange balls were flying across the sky, heading south. They reported it around about 20 after 9 in the evening. In New York City, this is in the summer, in New York City they saw it and it was streaking across the sky. A New York City newspaper reporter said that it was unusual. It was not like a meteor like you normally would see. You know, like normally if you see like a falling star, it's like, oh, look at that, gone, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And this, he said it took it over a minute to cross the night horizon, from horizon to horizon. And he reported it that way. And another reporter in another city further south made a similar description, that it was unusually slow. Well, I sat down with some friends of mine that were like aeronautical type people, and we calculated what that night window would be. It'd be about a 60-mile distance across the horizon, just as a rough number, a rule of thumb, so to speak. And we estimate that it probably was going between 1,700, or the two of these balls were going somewhere between 1,700 and 3,500 miles an hour. Now, that's the meteor that came in over Russia came in at 45 or 50,000 miles an hour. And that is a typical speed for like a meteor coming in. Mm-hmm. This was flying more like a supersonic aircraft or something like a shuttle making a reentry type of thing.
What year was that again?
1860. And they were the other, in fact, you kind of caught me there. It's either 1860 or 1861, but it's one of those 2 years. And it was reported in Philadelphia. It was reported in newspapers in Philadelphia, in Baltimore, in Washington, and later in Norfolk, Virginia. And that was the last anybody saw of it, as it, when it was reported to have gone into a cloud bank. Now, the times that were reported when people saw it was over about a 10-12 minute span, okay,
mm-hmm.
allowing everybody's clocks were set right, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's about a 470-mile distance. Again, that leads into that speed that we were talking about 1,700 to 3,000 miles an hour. Again, it depends upon how bright they were, how far out away from like the coast they were, things like that. Those factors come in. But this is just a rough estimate. But it, for my money, I would say it looks like an atmospheric entry event.
Oh, this is really fascinating. Across the time frame of recorded sightings in New York State, what areas of New York have the highest concentration of UFO sightings?
Well, okay. I did a study. I can't give you all the numbers, but I did a study over the last 4 or 5 months, partly for my own column, and also to support a professor at a university out on the West Coast who's doing some research in this regard. So what we did was we took the National UFO Reporting Center's database and sucked it into a spreadsheet. One of the problems with the National UFO database is that it has no county information. Mm. Okay, so what we had to do was put it in a spreadsheet and then spend many tedious months looking up all the cities in the thing and filling in a column with the counties. The MUFON database has county information, so it was very easy to merge the data later. But one of the things we discovered was that, let me pull the little folder up here. In fact, I was just looking at it a couple of minutes ago. From 1999 to 2014, there were in excess around 4,600, 4,700 reported sightings in New York State over a 15-year window. The three highest counties, actually, let me give you the four highest counties. The four highest counties are Suffolk County down on Long Island. That's more towards the middle and to the tip. New York County in New York City. Erie County in the Buffalo area. And Nassau, which is on the New York City side of Long Island. Suffolk had, in that 15-year window, they had like 540 sightings. And then it trickles off very quickly down into much smaller numbers. But there were several counties in the state that had unusually high sightings for their areas.
Is there specific variables that you've uncovered about Suffolk County having an unusually high amount of sightings?
Nothing specific. Nothing specific. I'll figure the island is surrounded by water.
That's what I was thinking, yes.
Well, it's surrounded by water, so there might be the USO factor, as they say. The island is connected to New York City, which is one of the larger population bases in the world, okay? I suppose if you really wanted to go out there in the fringe, Montauk Point is out there at the far end of Long Island. And supposedly a lot of nefarious things were going on out there at one point.
Correct.
The goofy thing, I think, is that it depends upon where you are. And in fact, I've had people from the Hudson Valley say, oh, the Hudson Valley's the hot spot for UFOs in New York State. And amazingly enough, if you really want to be technical about it, Suffolk and Nassau County are the heavy. Well, Suffolk County is the heavy hitter in New York State. Period. Okay.
I had no idea that was the case. I would have thought something like somewhere around the Hudson Valley, of course the Pine Bush area. But
well, that's exactly. Pine Bush is in Orange County, right? In the 15-year window. Now, here's the problem here. This is also, there might be an artifact of reporting, okay? Let me explain it this way. Say there's a really fantastic sighting out here. It's out here in broad daylight on a day when a lot of people are out in the summertime, and 7,000 people report it. It's one sighting.
Mm-hmm.
You think about it.
Okay.
It's one sighting, okay? So they claim a huge number of sightings, but the two national databases don't show. Either people just call them into newspapers and never followed up and put them in one of the national databases, or they're all reporting the same sighting. You know what I'm saying? So, give you an example. By comparison, in that same 15-year window, let me verify something here. I believe a Pine Bush is in Orange County, if I remember correctly. I can confirm that momentarily, because it makes a difference whether or not it's in Orange or Westchester County. Pine Bush, and it is Orange County, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Orange County, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. It's of the 63 counties in New York State, it's in the top 10. Okay, it had in the 15-year window of 1999 to 2014, they had about 160 sightings, and that's based on the National UFO Reporting Database and the MUFON database combined. Okay,
mm-hmm.
But ahead of it was Suffolk, mm-hmm. New York County, Erie County up in Buffalo, Nassau County, again Long Island, Kings County in the New York City area, mm-hmm. and also Westchester County, Monroe, and then the really goofy one is Monroe County up where Rochester is. Again, what are we looking at with Erie County and with Monroe County? All the other counties along the Lake Ontario, very small numbers. Monroe County sticks up like a sore thumb. Okay? Same thing with Erie. All the western New York counties have relatively low sighting numbers, okay, but by comparison, and then Erie County is through the roof. Of course, people say it will tell you, well, it must be the Erie Lake effect. Okay, there's a lot of sightings both in Lake Erie and in Lake Ontario. And I saw something the other night on Hangar One that says the Great Lakes kind of have more missing planes and things like that than the Bermuda Triangle does.
That makes sense to me. There are some ley line anomalies, I know, near Oswego, and I'm not sure what county that is, but there's a lot of reports of UFOs, of course, in the Great Lakes area, and specific people out there filming fantastic stuff.
You know what's funny there with Oswego? New York State, I've been comparing where all these high numbers are. I've had a couple of other UFO experts kind of starting to look at my data a little bit. And for the first pass, everybody said, well, maybe there's no Air Force base or Army base or military base there. Okay, fine, we eliminated that. I went on the USGS survey, and I checked this. I looked for fault lines, you know, earthquake zones. Nah, New York's a pretty solid place. The shaky parts are down towards New York City. You know, there's a major fault down there. But up in the rest of the state, it's extremely stable bedrock. We looked at pollution factors. We looked at about the only thing that consistently comes up is water and population. There's a gentleman by the name of Tom Conwell, in Troy, New York. He has been doing a parallel, sort of a parallel study. We kind of tripped over the other day when I posted one sample of my work up on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
He took a different tack with the same data that I was using. He didn't look at pure numbers. He started looking like it. He broke it down into classifications of the orange fireballs or the cylinder-shaped ships or the diamond-shaped ships or the triangles, that type of thing. He broke them down into categories. And he mined the data very similar to me.
Mm-hmm.
And when he sent me a picture of a New York State map with pins on it for one particular type of craft. And his map settings bared out what I had. Okay, and they all seem to be going over huge population areas or large concentrations. In fact, it looked very much like the 2012 or 2010 census map showing population centers right along the New York State Thruway, slant the Erie Canal, whatever you want to call it, that whole little stretch across the middle of New York State and down the Hudson. And that's where the majority of these sightings are, in certain clusters. That has been eye-opening for a bunch of us.
I understand that that's valuable data, but is it also because there are people there? Otherwise, if there's a UFO flying over an unpopulated area, it wouldn't be reported.
Not necessarily. Let me give you an example. Long Island, per sighting, it was about 3,600 people per sight, or 36,000 people per sighting. In the New York City area, it was 2.9 or something like that, 2.9 million people per sighting. So, yeah, okay, if you're up in the Adirondacks someplace where there's very, very sparse population, you would think you wouldn't see very many UFOs. But there are places up there, up in the deep Adirondacks, where they've had some horrendous sightings. In fact, I wrote one up about 6 months ago where when I went back through both databases to see what was going on, and there was like a whole bunch of these lakes, and these families had camps up on these really remote lakes up in the Adirondacks, really up there in the North Country. And there was one set of sightings that happened, and there were multiple reports from different lakes up there, and I was able to put a timeline together. And I was able to track. I got on a New York State map. I had it taped up on the wall, and I was sitting there looking. I had little yellow stickies on the thing, pointing out. And there was a reporting track from one lake moving northwest. You know, so population makes a difference. You got to have people there to see it. But mm-hmm. there are some areas where there's sparse population, and they still have a lot of sightings.
I find it fascinating when you begin to look at the variables that you include in your database, such as bodies of water, power stations, ley lines, mountains, national parks, cities, and then specific rock formation and mineral deposits. And we've had on a guest who was filming consistent UFO activity above an area known to be abandoned coal mines. Are there abandoned coal mines or mining operations in New York State that have a lot of UFO activity that you know of?
There are some. There are some abandoned mine towns up in North Country, and there are UFO sightings up in those general regions. Not huge numbers, but you know, proportional to the fact that the place is pretty sparsely populated. Now, when you look at coal mines for a second, now down in Pennsylvania, there's I don't know how many of them are. You can probably Google this, but there's one particular place down there. They had a fire start back in the 60s, and it got down into the mine, and it literally set the coal on fire inside this mountain.
Wow.
Okay, they had to move the town because people were getting carbon monoxide poisoning from the carbon monoxide that was coming up through the ground.
I remember
coming
that.
Into their cellars and
yes,
things.
Yes, I remember this now, yes.
Mount Carmel area. Mm-hmm. And I've driven through there, and I was driving down one of the highways, and that highway is now closed, but it has since collapsed into kind of like a fire-generated sinkhole. Mm. But a couple of years ago, I was driving down to that area, and I drove past one of the town cemeteries there, and it was like a scene out of a horror movie. There was smoke coming out of the graves and things, you know, and it was really, really, really strange.
The other variables here, such as mineral deposits, have you noticed UFO activity among specific mineral deposits? And another overlay...
No.
You haven't. Okay. Another overlay would be gravity maps. Have you looked at that?
No, I haven't gotten to gravity maps. Understand, I've been so meticulously going through all these. There's a laundry list of things that my editor asked me to look at. Like I said, the most consistent thing that we have seen has been population and water. That's the two consistent things we're seeing. As far as gravity maps are concerned, I do have one hint on that. There's these things called gravity hills, okay? In New York State, there's one called, and your listeners can Google this and find it. It's called Spook Hill. Spook Hill in New York State. It's in Yates County. And it's one of these places, and there's about 80 of them on the planet that they know of. And you can get to the bottom of this hill, or you can either drive up over the hill, like on an asphalt road, and then get to the bottom of the hill and put your car in neutral, and it'll pull you slowly back up the hill. There's a couple people who have shot video of it. In fact, when I did a story about it some months ago, and not specifically Spook Hill, but because people had come to me and said, oh, Cheryl, you should go look at the UFO activity. Must be happening around Spook Hill. And what I found was it was like one of the lowest areas of UFO activity in the state. And that was telling in itself. Give me a second here, and I will tell you what it's like. It's in Yates County, and Yates County was the 8. Of 64 counties in New York, it was 8 from the bottom in sightings.
That is very telling. What other areas have very low concentrations of UFO sightings in New York?
Okay, let me flip back to that page for a moment. Bear with me. Mm-hmm. It was, Hamilton County, Schoharie County, and this is from the bottom, okay?
Mm-hmm.
In 14 years, Hamilton County had 6 UFO reports. Schoharie County had 7. Wyoming County, that's out in the Alleghenies, out in the western part of the state, had 8 sightings. This is in a 14-year window now. Lewis County had 9. Fulton County had 10. Seneca County had 12. Essex County had 13. And Yates County had 14. It goes up. And this is on the one sheet that sightings were under 20. Okay, here, let me read the rest of those real quick. There was, after Yates County, it was Shenango County, he had 15. Schuyler County had 16. Montgomery County had 16. Tioga County had 18. Allegheny County had 18. Steuben County had 19. That's where I grew up. Orleans County had 19. And Delaware County had 19. After that, it starts going up. These were the ones that were all under 20.
What do you take from that specific data because of the low concentration of UFO reports in those areas? Is there any other information that gives you another perspective?
Well, yeah, because when you say about concentrations and things, okay, there's one county out there in the center of the state. I'm looking across here. Okay, well, here's an example. Sitting in about the middle part of the state, Broome County, which is right down in the southern tier between, right down there, probably 10 miles from the Pennsylvania border. Okay? Them and Ulster County and Oneida County and Richmond County all had about 90 to almost to 100 sightings over the 14-year window. That isn't very much as compared to the heavy hitters, but it is a spike when you look at the surrounding counties that are part of the what we call the New York State Economic Group. There's 10 New York State Economic Groups, like there's the Finger Lakes group, which is the ones that are up there around Rochester, and it's about eight counties up there. And there's the Central New York, which is like here in the Syracuse area and the counties that sort of surround Central New York. There's the Western New York, which is the folks out there towards Buffalo. The Southern tier is down there along that, like Bath, New York, all the way over to Binghamton, that area. That's called the Southern tier. And then it goes down the Hudson Valley. And, of course, there's the county, there's large county areas up in the North Country. And I sorted out the data by the economic regions. And each one of them had at least one county that was spiking above the rest. Now, that doesn't tell me much other than the fact that when you put it back on the, I think that's a coincidence. When you do look at it from the standpoint of where they are in the state, again, there's either some major population center there or, in a couple of cases, a major body of water, one or the other.
I find the variables really interesting, Cheryl, specifically the bodies of water. And what can you tell listeners about the significance of bodies of water in UFO reports?
Well, you know, there's that whole idea of the deep water lakes, that type of thing. I mean, technically, a couple of the Finger Lakes are very deep water lakes. Seneca, for sure. It's over 600 feet deep in a couple of places. Okay, in fact, the Navy has had a sonar test station up there since World War II. It's still functioning. They test sonar technology there. Okay. Of course, local lore says they're tracking the sea monster that's in Seneca Lake, but
that's probably true.
Yeah, that's true too. The goofy thing here is, I think what you have to look at is there's no really clear cut thing that you can point to. A lot of people, like I said, a lot of people were saying to me, "Well, Cheryl, there's no military bases there or anything like that." And we quickly eliminated that. And I got talking to a person who is an anthropologist. And she, because she's in academia, I couldn't use her name or anything like that. She didn't want to be associated with the UFO articles, they say. We're writing a major feature. My column is normally only about 400 or 500 words a week on SyracuseNewTimes.com. We're in the process of writing about a 2,500-word, 3,000-word feature story right now about this data. That's why I'm not sharing a huge amount about it. And the goofy thing about it was the anthropologist said to me, he says, "Well, if I went to Africa, why would I want to traipse around out in the jungle when I want to study people? Why I want to study an ancient culture? I would go to where the population centers are." So thinking like an anthropologist, the UFO sightings around more populated centers makes a lot more sense.
That's a really good viewpoint from an anthropologist, but you know, we certainly don't know much about the occupants who pilot these craft or if there are even occupants, but I want to get to that point a little bit later. I want to ask you about another variable, and that would be power stations, nuclear power stations.
Okay.
What's significant about that variable?
Oh, goodness. Okay, New York State has four nuclear reactors, generating facilities. One's down at Indian Point. It's very famous because they had a lot of black triangles hover over it, that type of thing. It's one of the oldest nuclear power plants in New York State. There are two up here in Oswego County, okay, just about 40 miles up the road from me.
Mm-hmm.
And there is one in Wayne County, sort of near Rochester. Wayne County, Oswego County that's covering three of the reactors. Their siting levels are very, very small. Okay, I'll give you an example. Oswego County, Oswego County hit 55 sightings in 15 years. Wayne County had bear with me a moment, I've got to flip a page here. Wayne County had 30 sightings. Now, Indian Point is down in Westchester. Yes, Westchester is in the top 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, in the top 6. But again, the Hudson Valley has been a bit of a hot spot. Are they the hot spot? No, they aren't. Long Island is the hot spot.
That's really interesting news to me. Our guest is Cheryl Costa. She writes about UFOs in a weekly column for the Syracuse New Times. We'll be right back after this break. If you've tuned in just now, our guest is Cheryl Costa. We're talking about her weekly column reporting on UFOs in the Syracuse New Times, and specifically about the sightings in New York State. All right, so power stations as a variable, that's very interesting. What about ley lines? Because I know you're working on that right now. What can you tell us
about that? Have really good ley line charts is the problem. I've reached out to a couple people, and I haven't. There's one guy I got to talk to yet that you put me on to that I've got to check with. But right now, for everything I have found so far with the ley lines, I'm not seeing a lot with it just now.
As another variable, Cheryl, what about specific rock formations?
Well, I didn't see anything in the chart when I pulled up USGS survey charts looking for like fault lines and the type of rock we have in this area. I didn't see anything that stuck out. Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little bit of fault line up around the North Country as you're getting up around the St. Lawrence, a little bit of a fault line, and then there's a fault line that extends up from Washington, D.C. and goes under New York City. That's it. That's about all there was. Of course, I have not consulted a geologist for maybe more detailed information, but I was pulling from the USGS survey maps that were available online, and they put an awful lot, they made an awful lot of material available, so I was quite comfortable with that, making that statement.
Have you done any research in regard to underground bases in New York State?
No, I have not. I'm open to ideas, but the one that was associated with the Montauk Point area, that's been pretty much boarded up and concreted up for years.
Yes, that's what I've heard as well, but I'm sure that there are others up through the Hudson Valley and New York State. They're really difficult to find information about that.
Something I can tell you a little bit about. This one college professor, different guy, contacted me and he said, can I share some of his data up the Hudson Valley? And I said, sure, what would you like? And he needed the same kind of county information. So, again, that was one of the other things that prompted me to continue doing this project I was working on, because it was tedious. Trust me, it was very tedious. It was like sitting here every night for about 2 hours a night and looking up different cities and things like this, and mm-hmm. every freaking little whistle stop that had a sighting. The big cities were easy, you know, because you could just go ahead and do a global fix on anything. It was like New York City or the Bronx or something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But this guy told me, he said there are... they have identified caves down in the Hudson Valley that may have archaeoastronomy alignments. And these were man-made. He said these are not natural formations. These were made by somebody. And they have what they think are archaeoastronomy alignments, like the sun, when the sun sets, like on a solstice or something like that, the light comes in, or when it rises, the light comes into it, or something like that. Kind of like the Newgrange site up in Ireland.
I see that you're about to really get into uncovering a lot more information, and What can you tell us about the feature article that you're working on?
I'm going to have to dance around it. Journalists don't like to trump their work, if you know what I'm saying. I'm basically telling the story of how we acquired this data and the places that that we're seeing peaks, which are kind of unusual. I showed somebody in the media a chart for like the Finger Lakes area, and when they looked at it and they said, why would that county have so many UFO sightings, was the first question this guy asked me, you know, when everybody else is like nothing or very little, you know. And so the slides are making people ask funny questions. And I'm hoping that maybe after we write this article and we put these slides up and make them available, that some reader or somebody will look at this thing and say, oh, did you know we have this thing, you know, something we have not thought of yet, you know. It certainly isn't wind farms. It's not nuclear reactors. The only thing it correlates with is population centers. Okay, so far. Mm-hmm. But as my spouse, who's a professional librarian, will tell you, a research librarian, she says to me, correlation does not equal causality.
That's true. It's a very good axiom to keep in mind when you're doing this heavy number crunching with databases. Yes.
Yeah. You know, the thing that we're missing here, and I need to speak up about this, everyone who's out there doing serious research, the people who speak at these conventions and things who are doing serious research, guys like Tom Conwell up there in Troy, this thing, he just started putting pins in a map one night. And then, again, him and I turned out to have similar backgrounds because both of us did data analysis in the Fortune 500 companies we both worked for. And so we're both retired. And you got to look at the fact that Dr. Condon, back in 1968, when they did the Condon Report, he basically poisoned the well for any federal money for doing research on it. So people in colleges, professors in colleges, if they want to research this thing, they're doing it on their own time because they're not going to get any college money to do it. They're not going to get federal grants to do it. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And all of the organizations that can validate scientific information are either government agencies, there's no money for them, there are National Academy of Science type agencies in a particular country, ours is not going to get any money for that, colleges aren't going to get any money for that, where you would have peer-reviewed literature and papers and research, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the newspapers stopped covering this stuff. And they used to be a source of a major newspaper before the internet was considered a source of record. Okay, they're not doing it. In fact, I went to two or three editors here in the region for major papers. I'm on a small paper, and we went to a couple of the editors and said, "Would you be interested in taking a look at our data?" They wouldn't even look at the slides. I wanted to show them less than a dozen slides. I said, 10 minutes is all I ask. And they wouldn't even, oh, no, we're going to pass on that. We're not interested. It's silly. It's hoo-ha. But think of it this way. Citizen scientists have been doing substantive research for years.
Mm-hmm.
The amateurs have been doing amazing research for years. Ham radio is a good example. They call it amateur radio. Some of the best innovations that have come out. You know, cell phones we all run around with? They had that technology back in the late 60s, early 70s, before anybody else dreamed of it.
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
Now, granted, it was a bigger radio, physically big radio underneath their dashboard or something like this,
mm-hmm.
but they had relay towers for doing all this stuff, and they could do what they called an auto patch call, where you could call through a club-owned station that had a connection to a telephone. To a telephone line, and would you could patch out. Okay, so they did a lot of very extensive research over the years. So for over 100 years, ham radio operators have done this sort of thing. So the amateur scientist does not get a lot of. Everybody thinks everybody has to have a PhD. There are people in the amateur circles that are doing master's and PhD level work, but maybe they don't have that piece of paper. Now, I've got a bachelor's degree, and I probably won't go much past that. Mm-hmm. But I'm putting that degree to work here with all of my research work. And the citizen scientists are the people who are doing the serious work on this topic matter of UFOs right now. Because there's no money out there to do it.
No, I was surprised when I heard that you actually had a column. The mainstream press is right now notorious for polarizing the topic of UFOs into believers on one end and debunkers on the other. And despite the mountains of research, the mainstream snaps right back to that black and white viewpoint on this topic. And it's as if nothing substantial had been written about it.
It's worse than that. It's worse than that. Back before I started writing this column, I read an article on CNN.com, and it wasn't written by them, but it was carried by them from some other, you know, they carry a lot of other little news groups, and for sidebar stories, that type of thing. This is back in 2012. There was an article there that said, oh, UFOs have been on the decline since the 1980s. Maybe they were all just an urban legend anyway. And I wasn't a serious UFO person. I was always what you'd call a UFO bystander. I had read a lot of stuff since the 60s, since I was a kid. And there was a time back in early, about 1990, I was between apartments at the time, and I had to have a sort of emergency abdominal surgery. So I was out of action for like 3 or 4 months.
Oh, yeah.
And I had no place to live. All my stuff was in storage because I was between two apartments. And a gentleman I know said, look, I'm taking care of my father who's got cancer. I'm staying it over at his house. Here's the key to my house over here in, you know, Laurel, Maryland. Feed the cat, pay the utilities, and stay there as long as you like. Well, this guy had about every first edition of about every UFO book ever written up to that point.
You're kidding.
He had a library, must have had 100 books in it.
Oh,
he had
gosh.
Everything that Stanton Friedman ever wrote, and he had a first edition copy of it. And so the place didn't have cable TV, and so I had nothing better to do but read all these books. And so I got, again, very heavy knowledge on it. But, again, I was just sort of a bystander. I wasn't really a researcher and like this. And then in this 2012 thing, when they said these things were an urban legend, I said, wait a minute, that doesn't sound right. So for the first time in my life, I went out to the MUFON database. And at that point, they have a pretty good web interface. And I ran a couple of checks just here for New York State, you know, and I started seeing some numbers, and I started putting the numbers down. When I did my talk out at the International UFO Congress this past February,
mm-hmm.
I had a slide. I told this story, and I said, you know, they said that this stuff was an urban legend. And then I pop up a slide that shows the increase of UFO sightings from 1960 up to 1999, and it goes up almost exponentially. And it looks like a parabolic curve. And I looked out at the audience and said, what memo didn't the UFOs get?
It's interesting because clearly the mainstream press doesn't want to report on this in any kind of substantial way. And right now they're basically insulting the intelligence of everyone.
It's about marketing. It's about marketing. But I'll give you an example. I worked close to, at one point of a paper, not the one I report for. I worked very close to their editorial staff at another newspaper. I was in a technical area. I wasn't part of the editorial people. And one night I went out for a cup of coffee up there, and I talked to a couple of people up in editorial. They were all having a smoke break outside. And I said, do you guys ever get, like, UFO calls phoned into you? Oh, yeah, we get a bunch of nuts call us, about 5 or 6 a week. We just hang up on them. How do you know that somebody doesn't have a freaking starship parked in the mall parking lot out here and you guys are hanging up on them? Yeah, they're nuts. And I had a long talk with their executive editor, and he said, all this stuff's been written off to hoaxes and crazy people. I said, not even close. Not even close. And I showed him a couple of charts I had on my iPad. And I showed him a couple of charts. He said, where'd you get those numbers? I said, you know, I dug them out. I said, do you guys want to do a story about this? No, we couldn't do that. I said, why? Are you afraid of losing the newspaper, losing its credibility by doing an article about what's going on over our heads in the state? We're about number 5 or 6 in the country, and we carry about 3 to 5% of the world's sightings, and you guys don't want to do a newspaper story about it? And no, they didn't. In fact, I pitched that guy's predecessor a couple of days ago, and he passed.
Hmm.
I said, nah. And they said, it's about marketing. He says, you know, you're going to upset the apple cart. They've got this nice little, here's how it was put to me. All the major media in this country are owned by about a half a dozen companies now. And nobody at any lower level, even in higher management at the local level, wants to upset their boss and then their boss. That's what it comes down to. All the big corporations own the radio stations, they own the TV stations, and they own all of the newspapers. When I was coming up, when I was in high school, I got my first job in radio at 16 years old by walking over and making an appointment with the program director at a local radio station, going up and having a cup of coffee with him in his office and pitching him why he wanted me as an intern in his radio station. You can't do that now. You can't get paid. If you want to get a job in a radio station now, other than web radio, you've got to go through some corporate HR department in some faraway city that you're just a nameless name on a resume. That's what it's come down to. They're controlling all of the information. Our information is being controlled worse than it was in Russia during the Cold War.
Well, I wonder about that. Cheryl, do you get any interference by agents, government agents, anything like that, messing with you at all?
Yeah. And if if everything I'm doing is so silly, why do I get censored? I wrote an article a couple of weeks ago. We have a running joke at the newspaper. If Cheryl, on an average week, I have thousands and thousands of connections to my article, from other websites, UFO websites, people making links to it, it going viral. Joe reads it and sends it to his kids in college, and they share it with their friends. All of that stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
On a weekly basis, that's what I get. If I mentioned Susie and her parents were at the ice cream stand and saw the three bright glowing discs fly overhead, followed by a couple of Air Force jets, you can't find my article on the internet. You can't find it on Google unless you specifically type in the URL for our paper into that specific article. You can't find it. Google will not show me. If I write about you need to support, you know, Mr. Bassett down there with the citizen hearings, you know, you can't find my article. I tell you to write your congressman and say, hey, we want disclosure hearings. You can't find my article on the internet.
Censorship, essentially, online, Google.
That was my argument. That was my argument at the UFO Congress. People say, Cheryl, you have no proof. I said, I have tons of proof. Proof is constituted eyewitness testimony. I report what people say they saw. I've had newspaper people say, oh, but you can't verify it. I said, I don't have to. Eyewitness testimony will get you convicted in almost any court in the country, point one. Okay? Point two, if everything I'm writing is so silly and so ridiculous and so childish, why am I being censored?
Right. You got to love that. Now, I wondered about going beyond the UFO sighting, and studying UFO sightings is a wedge in the pie chart of the larger picture, such as where could these objects be coming from? Are they intersolar? Are they interstellar, terrestrial, indigenous?
I have no idea. I've seen a lot of material that people say they might be interdimensional. And okay, I can't argue with that. But on the other hand, who says somebody, you know, I have people say, well, you know, if they're off in this other galaxy, say Andromeda galaxy or something like that, you know, that's like a gazillion light years away, you know. But who says maybe they don't have a shortcut to get here? You know,
mm-hmm.
Who says the Zeta Reticula, you know, they're 47 light years away. Okay, who says they can't get here in 5 months? I mean, when Columbus came here from Europe, it took them 3 months. 100 years later, when they had clipper ships, they were getting here in a month. The space station does it every 45 minutes, or every 20 minutes, if you want to do it that way.
Mm-hmm.
45 minutes to go all the way around the Earth.
Right.
Who says that there's not another way to get there? We just haven't figured it out yet.
The mainstream press and other channels of media certainly haven't helped to evolve these questions and this discussion very much. Yes, there's the exopolitics out there, but it seems like a lot of these groups have specific agendas. I wonder what the younger generations are going to pick up and run with in the years to come with this, because if they're censoring, you know, really good research and especially good database research, what will people have as we move forward, you know, try to move forward in advancing the discussion here?
I think it's going to come down to the visitors doing something extremely overt. It's one of three things. I'm kind of with Richard Dolan on this. It's either something amazing is going to have to happen from the aliens, okay, whether they're interdimensional or extraterrestrial. We're either in cahoots with them, and that's one possibility. The other possibility is, okay, say, like my editor says, he says, well, if they came all this distance, why don't they get out and say hi? Well, if they're anthropologists, that would be contamination. And you don't, you know, it's like Star Trek Prime Directive. You don't go and contaminate a culture that you want to study. Okay, that's one issue. The other, I think, comes down to this idea that few years ago, you wouldn't have anywhere near the number of programs that are running on cable that are talking about this stuff now. Nobody was talking about this stuff. I saw stuff on Hangar One the other night that, from a week ago, talking about the UFOs that were shooting at us in Vietnam. Now, I was in Vietnam. I heard stories about the enemy helicopters. There was not really a helicopter, but because the other side didn't have helicopters, but they always put in the report, if they said an enemy helicopter, they were talking about a UFO.
Wow.
And a lot of goofy things went on. We lost a couple of small naval ships. A B-52 bomber got shot down. A lot of goofy stuff happened, okay? And there was this sort of, people, you know, it's like marking your territory. You know, you think you're going to push back at them. They got a bigger baseball bat and a higher tech baseball bat. They're going to push back, okay? And that's what it appears to be. Are they running our planet right now? Who knows? They could be. If they're in cahoots with the right people, they could be. On the other hand, maybe none of them have. They're just studying us very quietly because we are primitive. They don't care about our technology other than the fact that they don't like the idea of us contaminating the planet with nuclear stuff that takes for eons to clean up.
Right, right. Or blowing ourselves up.
I think somebody used the term a few years ago that they consider us the planet of the children. And they're probably exactly right. But on the other hand, maybe we are being manipulated. Some factions, you know, who sold out for, you know, kind of like you see in X-Files, they sold out for technology or they sold out for power or whatever. Who knows? I don't know. All I know is lots of cool stuff is happening overhead, and people report this stuff on a weekly basis. Summertime is the high season for reporting, you know, and that's what we like. In fact, my editor is just noticing, making a point of that right now. We're just coming into warm weather. The sighting levels are going to go up significantly here over the next month or so, from about now to about October.
Oh, right. So that's going up along with the readers of your column. I'm sure it's going to be an interesting summer of sightings in 2015. If listeners want to find your column, how do they do it?
Two ways you can get to it. You can either go to SyracuseNewTimes.com and go to, uh, you, run your mouse across the little control bar and thing, and you'll see blogs, and it'll drop down, and there's one there called New York Skies, and they usually have parentheses, the UFO column. That's one way to find us. And a new article is up every Friday. Okay, every Friday around somewhere between 9 o'clock and noon, a new article is up. If you click on that blog, you'll find the last 8 to 10 articles I've written. The other thing you can do, if you've got Facebook, if you go to New York Skies, all one, three different words, New York Skies, and Skies spelled with an I-E-S, I have a summation page, and about every article I've written is up there. And that's a great place to go catch up on my articles. In fact, I've had a lot of traffic there this week. People are just starting to discover the Facebook page, and they're going out there and reading almost 2 years worth of archival articles.
You're doing a lot of heavy lifting on this topic and number crunching in New York State. I'm really interested to learn more about what you find out in the future, and I'll be reading your column, and I look forward to that feature column coming up. And I want to thank you for being on In Other News.
My pleasure. Have me back anytime.
Excellent. That's going to do it for In Other News. Join me again on Dark Matter Radio.